You're listening to The Startup with Monique LeRae, only on LA Talk Radio.
How's it going, Los Angeles? This is The Startup with Monique LeRae. I'm Monique LeRae. Happy Emmy Sunday. I'm so excited to be here with you guys. Congratulations to all the nominees, candidates, winners, everybody in the industry. What a big night. Thank you to everyone that's supporting the film we're streaming on Roku under the Flip Flop brand. You can also look on my links at the Pandemic Project documentary, at Monique LeRae Stinson, or just type in the Pandemic Project documentary stream and the website will come up. Buy your ticket, streaming now. One of three films, 4 years in the making. Thank you so much to everyone that's been supporting it. And I'm excited about the show. Today we have a full house. Lots of talent in the room, in the waiting room. Thank you again for the five-year love that everybody's been sending me and the channel. I can't believe it's been 5 years that I've been here, and we're looking forward to five more and to grow the brand. So you'll see, you know, more effort here to grow the channel. But if you aren't following us, please follow us on Instagram at The Startup with Monique LeRae. And that is Instagram. I think we have a TikTok and we might have a Twitter X as well. So we'll refresh all that and get that going. Also, I have another show on the channel at 2 o'clock on Sundays. We pre-tape a new show called The Ununited State of the World. We talk about politics. We talk about business. We talk about love, family, religion, and current events. So my co-stars, colleagues, and friends, Jay Heckendorn-Talinda and Francis Vigors. He's on the East Coast in Florida. I'm here in Laguna Beach in California. And Francis is in London in the UK. And we just come from different perspectives. And we give you the banter that you're having on Facebook with respect and hopefully some answers and, you know, to leave with more understanding on the other side. So it's a safe place to come. Have those conversations that you're going to be arguing about over the Thanksgiving dinner probably. But we do it so you don't have to. So... All right, you guys, with all that being said, I want to introduce my first guest. Welcome, Nick. Nick, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Nice to see you, and thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome, and it's nice to see you. And Nick is coming from, I believe he said the Panhandle or the Gulf in Alabama. I'm glad to see you guys are you're not having any storms today, are you, Nick?
Not today, but we had one last week that kind of just came pretty close to us. So we're glad we didn't have any damage at all. So it's always nice when that happens in a hurricane season.
Yes, it is nice. And I think you're on the tail end. So hopefully everything will be good going into the holiday season in Q4. So let's go full screen. And why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and viewers and tell us about your brand?
Hi, my name's Nick Dewhurst. I am... currently serving as a chaplain in the Navy, a fire chief, and I'm now teaching middle school. And all those things kind of had an impact on my life. But one of the things that had a major impact was I lost one of my best friends. My best friend ended a friendship, and it prompted me to write a book called I Finally Lost It. So that book is kind of an interesting book, if I do say so myself. And it doesn't just cover the loss of a friend. It covers all sorts of losses. I know if you're like me, you've probably not just lost things around the house or lost your car keys or anything like that, but you've had some real losses in your life. And for me, I've lost a lot of things. And each chapter of my book covers a certain amount of losses. One covers a loss of a friend, loss of jobs, even loss of pets. So that's one of the things about my book. It's kind of a comprehensive primer on loss and something I'm glad to talk about with you guys today.
Nick, thank you for sharing that and for introing your book and giving us a little bit of background there. I really find that you having the courage to delve into such a topic is refreshing. And you know, it's a scary place to go for some people, you know, and you're right. We can all relate to a loss in some form or another. What did your morning look like the day you woke up and decided to do this or a series of mornings?
So it actually was really kind of a shock to me. I had my best friend at the time. I don't know if you've ever had one of those work besties or somebody you've always worked with and kind of just bond with, you know, you talk to them every day and you kind of, you know, go through the shared trauma together. Sure. And, you know, you just kind of bond with them. And this one particular person who I call Sarah in the book, she was an amazing friend. And then, you know, a certain series of events happened and she just ended the friendship and basically left. And haven't really spoken to her since. So from best friend to nothing. And that sort of a loss really kind of shook me. Wow. Deeply. And you know, one of those things that I've always wanted to do is write a book. You know, you kind of have those ideas and those dreams and you're thinking, okay, this would be one of the goals, those stretch goals that you have for your life. Sure. But that loss just, you know, really that emotional place to be at, started me to write this book, and I wrote the book in 6 weeks. It was just it flowed so much because it was a place of pain, place of hurt, and trying to work through all those emotions of, you know, the loss of identity, the loss of friendship, the loss of everything that you kind of valued in that relationship, and now it was gone, and trying to work through that. So I was in a really tough spot. And having to deal with that. And so I wrote the book you know, it's called I Finally Lost It, because just, you know, sometimes you almost go crazy when you have any sort of loss. And that's kind of how I started the book and did that about a year ago. And so now, thankfully, I'm on the better side of things. So the book was definitely instrumental.
Wow. That's kind of cool that you used writing as therapy, or a safe place to express that, right? I think that's probably the healthiest thing I've heard. Like, here you have heartbreak from a friendship and a safe place, and a place where, you know, soft place to land. Everybody needs a soft place to land, and then that's ripped away, and you're like, let me write about my feelings instead of like drinking or, you know, going to Vegas or doing something probably destructive. That's really admirable. So let's hold up the book if you can.
Sure.
Really close. I want people to see this. And I Finally Lost It. It's very tongue in cheek. I finally lost it. Everyone can relate to that.
Right.
Nick, so you had a couple things going, right? It's a compound issue. You have corporate life and
right.
your safe place. The rug is pulled from up under you. Can you tell us, without divulging any, you know, anything that would be defaming, but could you help us understand the scope? Why did this person fall out of your life? Had they had a propensity to kind of disappear? What happened?
Yeah. So really what happened with this is that, you know, this person, you know, started doing a different position at the company that I was working for. And so our communication that was, you know, every day for 8 hours a day, you know, started to become less and less. And, you know, what had happened is I had sent a note kind of saying, hey, you know, I'm kind of worried about what's going on. You know, we're not as close as we used to be. You're not talking as much. What's going on? And, you know, probably me, a chronic overthinker. I don't know if you're one of those, but, you know, one of those things. And, you know, I just had sent probably a more emotional note than I probably should have. I should have let my wife read it first, more than likely. And, you know, it just, you know, kind of backfired, you know, explaining, you know, how I'm feeling and that person not really receiving it very well and basically ending the friendship. So, you know, one of the things in any good, healthy relationship is the ability to communicate those feelings and be able to do it in a safe space and be able to do it without judgment. Thankfully, I have, you know, two best friends right now that I'm able to do that with. And you know, there's that good mutual communication. Unfortunately, in this particular situation, that did not happen. And, you know, it hurts when those close relationships are ripped away.
Yeah, that sounds really, you're so transparent and like open. I'm leaning forward like this, by the way, Nick, because I look like you could see the, you know, the ring light in my glasses.
Right.
And I also look like the Hunchback. I was saying that on the show.
I mean, so I could do that too if you want me to.
Oh, you're so sweet. I don't want you to have to get a chiropractor later, but in case people are wondering what's wrong with my back. I think I can relate to this, and I know a lot of viewers and listeners can, more than you would think. But I think I understand from what you're sharing, because sometimes we I'm guilty of this too. I will misunderstand, you know, and it's a work relationship, but it sounds like you also were getting on emotional support. So I,
right.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people misread that, right? Like you're married, like it's not like you're trying to do anything extra, but like maybe people misread that and are uncomfortable with like how close, like, and sometimes people don't know that they're accidental mentors or leaders to someone and they inspired them. And you got probably, you felt like, wow, this is a person that I can trust. And maybe, like you said, you read it a different way and they did too. I mean, is there a space for that being a possibility?
I think there's always that that misconception or misunderstanding, especially in probably male and female relationships, if, you know, one or two of them are married, you know, and those are conversations that you definitely need to have with, you know, your partners and things like that when it comes to those. So, yeah, I'm sure there's probably some aspect of misunderstanding. And you know, one of the things is that, you know, I think very much you can still have those close relationships with those people as long as those guidelines are set and everybody is, you know, above board and open in communication. Again, back to the communication part of it.
100%. Communication's so key. Also, the communication you're having with yourself. I mean, you know, if that's not clear, how's the message going to get out and there be an active highway? I mean, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the, you know, it wasn't just the loss, though, but, you know, as I was going through the book and I was starting to write it, that particular loss was one of the last ones that I addressed in the book. As I started doing the process with one of my other mentors at the company that I worked for, him and I discussed it. And, you know, I just like started thinking, you know, this isn't the only loss I've had in my life. You know, I'm somebody that was adopted when I was four. My mom had schizoaffective disorder, and I didn't know my father. And I'm like, I just started thinking through some of these things. It's like, you know, I don't know my dad, so there's a loss. It, you know, it's not something that you're openly weeping of, but it's also something that, you know, is no longer a part of your life. You know, I've lost grandparents. I've lost a job. You know, how many of us have lost jobs? And those are just as heartbreaking in some cases as the loss of a friend. I've lost pets. One of the stories in the book I talk about is how I cursed my cat to hell. And 2 weeks later, it died in a house fire.
Oh,
and,
no. We got to be careful with the karma.
Right.
We got to be careful with what we're putting out there.
but I addressed those. You know, not silly types of losses, but they're still equally hurtful and equally painful for folks. Sure. And just being able to address that, maybe a little bit of humor. I think I can address it, you know, fairly humorously. But, you know, at the end of the day, I get kind of real and, like you said, transparent with some of these just because it's the way that I feel. I talk and I write very much, I guess, kind of the same way. I'm an open book. You know, if my life and my experiences can help somebody, you know, I'm all for helping people. It's kind of, you know, what makes up my DNA. I'm the fire chief of my fire department, a chaplain in the Navy, and now a middle school teacher. I left that toxic company a while ago. So now I'm, you know, impacting souls and lives as a middle school teacher.
You're a badass, Nick. We curse on this show, and I love.
It's okay. You're not offending me. It's great.
Okay, good. There's a heart back here. It's all love. It's all
right.
Love. But I'm loving that you are going there, and you're giving a tool for working professionals, for entrepreneurs, and everybody in between to kind of say, "Hey, you're assessing something." You're an emotional being. We all are, whether you know we want to say that or not out loud, and we need to have places that feel safe, to do the best work in our lives, to be the best people. And I love that this is kind of like a tool guide on how to deal with it. And you're going to a place. I can't wait to get my copy. I know it's in the mail soon. I know you're going to have your team send me my copy.
Oh, yes, they definitely will. I need to make sure I get your address and we can send that over.
Yes, they have. I will get it to them. Where can we order the book? It's perfect in time for the holidays, for Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa. We could put it right in the stockings.
It is. So you can find it on Amazon. It's in Kindle and it's on Amazon. It's called I Finally Lost It. I did a little bit of digging today and it wasn't coming up in the search, but my Instagram, I Finally Lost It, does have the link, and you can just copy and paste it in the browser and you can definitely order it. I'd love for you guys to get a copy. And you know, hopefully it's just going to be a help to you. The people that have read it, you know, they've laughed, they've cried, they kind of, you know, just read through the stories. And I don't design it to be like a just read this all in one setting. It's in little chunks. I have ADHD. And so sometimes, you know, I got to take things in small doses. And so just those small little stories, it's just a collection of those, but kind of categorized. So you don't even have to read it in order. It makes sense in any order. So it's I think it's a great book for anybody experiencing a type of loss. Just turn to the chapter that maybe affects you. And maybe it's something that can help.
Well done. Well done. And thank you for leaning in and taking the painful experiences and making it gold. I'm excited to get the book. Guys, get with, I finally lost it with Nick here. And he lost it, so you don't have to. That's my new thing. Like, we're doing it so you don't have to.
Right. Yes.
I think the collective feels, you know, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of change going on for a lot of people. So thank you for being a port in the storm for folks. And I hope that you know that it's appreciated. Love what you're doing. Please come back and give us an update on the book and everything else.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for having me.
All right, Nick. Be well.
Goodbye.
All right. I Finally Lost It by Nick. And his last name is Dewhurst. Dewhurst. Happy Sunday. Happy Emmy Sunday. Woohoo! Two times this year. The prime times happened earlier this year and the daytimes this spring. And then now we have the prime times again, because they were catching up from the strike, in case you guys weren't keeping track. All right. Want to shout out our sponsors and our supporters. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Iron Lace Jewels, Next Level Global Solutions, West Coast Olive Oil, and many more. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. And we have the next guest here, which is Dr. Tiara Moore. Dr. T!
What's up?
How's it going, girlfriend?
It is good. How are you?
Oh, blessed and highly favored, just like you. Right. Marine science, everybody. Okay, you guys, I'm excited about this segment. She came ready. I came ready to you, Dr. Moore.
Okay.
Guys, listen, Dr. Moore is doing some cool things in the ocean, just in general. We had the pleasure of having Dr. Moore's company be a part of the Emmys Celebrity Lead-Up event on Thursday, and a lot of selected A-listers got this. And this, why don't you explain the ride, the wave? First, introduce yourself. I'm so excited. There's so much to talk about.
I know. All righty. So, hey, everybody. I am Dr. Tiara Moore. I am the founder and chief executive officer or CEO of Black and Marine Science. And BIMS is a 501c3 nonprofit really aimed to celebrate the current Black marine scientists that do exist in the field, but also spread environmental awareness and inspire that next generation of scientific thought leaders. So ultimately, we are trying to change the face of who people see as scientists by also providing just barrier-free programs and resources to be able to get in the field, you know, for a little Black kid. So yeah, excited to be here and talk with you today.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Moore is around. She gets around, honey.
Yeah.
Belize and Florida and New York and LA and Chicago. I don't know where else. You're probably going to Vegas next. Who knows?
I mean, who knows? Actually.
I knew it. You know, you might as well just stop off on a layer.
Might anyway. As well, since I'm over here.
So I want to just share with you guys that I'm very impressed with Dr. Moore. You know, a lot of things could have happened 4 years ago. We all sat still and had a moment of what in the heck is going on and what am I doing next? And some people decided to take massive, bold action. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Tiara Moore is one of those individuals. Doctor, why don't you give us 2 minutes? We'll go full screen, Sam. Tell okay. us the background of how COVID catapulted your brand and how you are who you are. We'll go full screen.
Let's do it. All right, 2 minutes. So Black and Marine Science. So if you can imagine, so the quickest story is this. I finished my PhD in 2019. I went to UCLA. I then went on to do a postdoc. And if you know, it's like the residency of science. So they make you do extra schooling after you've already graduated. But then, so I was there. I was the only Black person in the lab that I was working in. I was only one at the PhD level at my job. And so it was just a lot of just aggressions, weirdness that was happening. But then the pandemic happened and we started working from home. But on top of that, pandemic is really the murders that were occurring with Breonna Taylor, with George Floyd, with Ahmaud Arbery. And I really remember when my colleagues asked me, like, oh, well, Tierra, like, whoa, this is going on with Black people. Like, do you experience this? And I was like, oh, no. Like, yes, I do. And actually from a lot of y'all. And so it was my time, actually, for the first time to start talking about my experiences with race in the workplace. And so, you know, we were at home spending a lot more time. And so I started tweeting like, yo, where are the other Black people at in marine science? It has to be more of us. And there were ultimately. And so people responded. We had this first week called Black and Marine Science Week, where we had panels, we had keynotes, all virtually. And I got to see for the first time all of these Black marine scientists from all over the world, literally people from Nigeria, Tanzania, Belize, the UK, Australia, just all over saying, hey, I am here. And so ultimately from that week, I saw, oh, this is way bigger than a tweet. This is bigger than a Zoom room. This can be a whole nonprofit. And that's when I founded Black and Marine Science. And so I was still working in the lab at that time, but ultimately I worked over the next 2 years to build BIMS as a side hustle until I was actually ready to break free and run it full time. And so for the last year and a half, I have been full time at Black and Marine Science, and we now have a staff of 7. We have a membership of over 500 members across 33 different countries. We have a set of 4 core programs, and we are building a research institution to really do a lot of this marine science research in the Black communities that need it most. So yeah, I am very excited again to just chat with you and talk about all the things that we have been up to in these past couple years.
Wow, you've been running these marine streets. That makes no sense. That really doesn't logically make sense, but I think you get it. You are running these coral reefs. That's exactly what we say. These coral reefs are getting run. Okay, so look, first of all, you're an Angeleno, I'm an Angeleno. I just love that you come from here. I love that you were educated here. I love that you are an exemplary example. You're an example of what something like opportunity and preparedness happens, right? Like you got into the school, you got into a lane. And this is what it looks like, everybody, when there's opportunity and someone is passionate. So these programs, these things work. Like, the system is good. Like, you know, we got a lot of things against us here, but that's another conversation for another day. She's like, she's in a science program. She's in college. She's in a marine. Like, it's unheard of. I don't think people get that.
Honestly.
I mean, do people really grasp that?
Yeah, I think that is the reason why I had to build Black and Marine Science, because I will not tell you the many times I've literally introduced myself. Oh, I'm Dr. Tierra Moore. I'm a marine scientist. People say, oh, you can swim? I'm like, oh. Wow. Yeah, like, oh, you get your hair wet? Wow, I didn't know y'all did that. And so there is just this misconception for just Black people in general, Black women, of us not even wanting to have this interest or get our hair wet or do things like that. So just that in itself is something that I have to deal with. And then also in the own community. So there's that. But then in our communities, you know, I remember when I first told my grandma about me wanting to do this, she's like, what?
Did she call you Nemo?
Yeah, right. Well, no, she actually called me the Little Mermaid because love
you know, it's going to be a reference to some movie.
Yes, it was my favorite Disney princess growing up. So it was like, okay, Little Mermaid, you're here. But it was just like, we didn't see people who look like us doing this. And so it was like, is that something for us? Like, is it safe? Are we supposed to be doing that? So a lot of the work we do at BIMS is really just education and increasing ocean literacy, you know, breaking down those barriers, but also talking about the historical trauma that is there. talking about the things that we don't necessarily want to talk about, but then saying, hey, this did happen, but hey, here's some free swim lessons. Like, let's get over this. Or, hey, let's go scuba diving together with a whole Black group so you're not isolated on this boat of divers who think you can't dive. You know, so really just trying to create spaces for us to be able to have safe, but also just enjoy the ocean like we should. But then it's, again, so much bigger because there's so much going on. Nutrient pollution, sea level rise, ocean acidification, all those things, and they're impacting Black communities more, Caribbean communities more. So we need scientists like me to be well-educated to be able to provide those solutions that those communities need.
You know what? You just took my soul to another place. I just didn't realize I am today years old when I just had an aha. You know how like Oprah talks about an aha moment? Mm-hmm. See, I thought I had this all covered, like all the angles. And then as you were speaking, because you are very educated in what you're doing and you're looking at the macro view. I think I'm looking at the 30,000 foot most times, but I'm not. Sometimes I'm looking at the small. I just had a moment of, is it, because you know, you're a scientist, so we know the traumas of the past in our community are cellularly communicated and transported. We know that. It's not like we're trying to be a victim. It's just science. I just had a moment when you were speaking about the whole boat and water situation. I just had that thought. I never had that thought. I just thought, I never knew where that came from, actually, because I used to be a lifeguard at Raging Waters. I know I'm yellow. We get everybody, I could take this wig off and it would be a different situation. Am I making any sense or am I crazy?
I mean, the slave trade. Listen, we just gonna call it right out. Slave trade is what it is. I have spoke about this publicly. I have written this in papers and people are like, there is no connection. That is the historical trauma that led to folks who look like me not necessarily trusting boats or wanting to be in the water. But then on top of that, there was just the policing and segregation of pools. You know, my grandma tells a story of she grew up and white folks would like throw bleach or acid in the one pool that they had in the neighborhood. So you never really knew if it was safe. So this was systemic that we were kept away from the water and seen as stewards of this space, even though our ancestors definitely were. I think the misconception is that, you know, slaves were just stolen because they were just lurking. No, they were the scholars. They were the fishermen, they were the scientists, and they were taken because of their skill set and bought to work for other people. And I talk about, you know, the ancestors of, there's a whole study of the ones who chose the ocean. You know, the ones who were like, this is
taking me to places that we need a whole other hour. This is taking me to Lake Lanier. Okay. The ancestors are not playing about that place. And then it's also taking me to like that hymn, that African hymn, the Wade in the Water. It's taking me to so many places. Guys, this is a show about business. We didn't mean to go salty, but we can't help it. You know what?
The ancestors are here.
It's Sunday, you guys. Get with Dr. Tierra Moore. Find out if you guys can partner. Thank you for the beautiful gifts. I love the little kits. I love the little aqua marine, like the waterproofed. Listen, everything was done first class, and she's in Belize, but she's in LA. She's worldwide. I think this is a really great like field trip opportunity because I think you might remember Marineland in Palos Verdes years ago. It was like SeaWorld. We had Marineland, and I just love the dolphins, and I've always just been loving the ocean. I live by the beach, but I really love where you're going, and I appreciate your support. Dr. Moore's commercial is on our film, streaming now on channel on Roku, and you can get it on my bio. We'll plug that later. Thank you, and you also have something coming up, so why don't we have two more minutes. Why don't you wrap with plugging what you're doing and your show?
Yes. Okay. So I know you had the Ride the Wave campaign. So that is for those who got that. You can come scuba diving with me in Belize. Check us out. Go to our website, bims.org. and check that out. But the biggest event that we have of the year is our Black and Marine Science Week. So y'all, I started this organization with that as it was a virtual conference. Now we are in the streets. We are having this conference in person, and it is going to be in San Diego this year. So not too far from LA. It's going to be December 1st through the 7th in Paradise Point. And so the beauty of Black and Marine Science Week is a scientific conference mixed with a retreat. So we have, you know, your keynotes, we have your panels, we have your workshops. But on the other side, we have our signature BIMS Bliss Lounge. So y'all, you can go get a massage. You can talk to our on-site therapist. You can go in color, because we really know that talking about climate change and this work that we're doing is kind of hard and stressful. So we want to have a space to talk about it, but also a space to decompress in the same week. So it's not just all week. So definitely check us out. I was here for LA Climate Week. So if you hear the sound of my voice, you can use the discount code LA Climate Week to register for the conference right now. Thanks, y'all.
Yes, 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 yes. And I love that you're keeping the ocean peaceful where people come. Like, I like that you are thoughtful in that regard. And, yes. You know, I was thinking, and we'll leave it with this. If you're curious about water science, the marine life, if you have children that are leaning towards that, reach out to Dr. Moore's team and get involved. This is a great field trip opportunity. This is a great conference space to come to Belize. It's a beautiful place. I've been there, had the pleasure to go there once. Oh my God, the water, it's beautiful.
Yes.
And the people are beautiful. So I love what you're doing, sis. I can't wait to see. So maybe Mauritius next, or Seychelles, darling.
Yeah, that's it. Seychelles, that's on my list. That's on my list. Follow us everywhere, y'all. Black Marine Science, all the socials and YouTube. Thank you, Monique.
Mwah. Stay amazing. Loving you. All right. Wow. All right, Dr. Moore. That's awesome. She's awesome. All right, guys. We have our next guest. And I want to say
hello.
Hi, welcome.
Kavai, yes.
How is it? Welcome back. How's it going?
Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being patient. We have some great talent today. It's Emmy's week. What do you expect? All right. Why don't we go full screen, and I'm going to have you introduce yourself and your brand.
Absolutely. All right. So I wait for the full screen, right? Before I start. Okay, great. All right. All right, so my name is Kaveh. I've been in business for about 20 years or a little bit more than that. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I have raised funding. I have a company exit. I've been mostly in leadership roles in companies, whether it's CEO or CMO, or a lot of times part-time chief marketing officer, fractional CMO. And that's kind of, I've been all over in different industries. I've worked anywhere from gaming to healthcare to professional services to food. One of my more recent experiences I'm really proud of is that when I was founding CMO, Chief Marketing Officer of Cozy Meal, I grew the company from almost no product market fit to the largest cooking classes marketplace in the U.S., and my main expertise is marketing, although like I have an engineering background and then MBA, and so I have also shipped products, so I know a little bit about that. So when it comes to marketing, my main expertise there is search engine optimization, although because I've been fractional CMO of 8 different companies, of course I know a lot about all different marketing channels. These days, I have 2 companies that I'm the founder of. One of them is RiseAngle. And RiseAngle is a generative AI game development company where you describe your idea and it generates a game and delivers it to you in less than 24 hours. And that's pretty disruptive. The other company, which is more probably relevant to this show and to this audience, is RiseUp. And RiseUp, we help different businesses in the capacity of fractional CMO or part-time chief marketing officer. We bring a marketing team and we help the company. And then we basically tell companies what your marketing priorities should be with devised marketing strategies. If they don't have the people, we hire the right people for them. I have hired over 500 people in the last 10 years, so we really have a great talent pool that we also have worked with before and we trust. And then those are sometimes our preferred people. Then we actually also, after we plug in those really great talent to the companies, we also then help them by for the execution. So we set KPIs, we help them execute on those marketing strategies and in general, helping them grow. So like, and usually our specific, the best clients for us and who we are helping are companies that have a few million dollars in revenues to $100 million. Revenues, usually small and medium-sized businesses that have nationwide visions. So they want to, they may be like starting from a small market, but they want to go nationwide. They want to expand to all markets and they have a big vision and they need marketing help. Now, that is probably a good segue for the role of AI and how marketing, it could, how AI could transform all of the marketing efforts in the next few years. And I will let you, if you have any questions there, ask that, and then I will go to that.
Well, wonderful. Kaveh, thank you so much for that summary, because I appreciate how you got here. And yes, you are right in the moment. I actually have a couple books that I'm working on finishing. One is All In on AI. And then the other one is The Digital Mindset. Okay. And so I think this conversation is quite timely. People are allergic to this word that don't really know. And congratulations on your app, by the way, the Rise Op, or your product here, your brand, and all of that, the capital that you've raised for the companies and being in the C-suite and making a difference. I really love it. You're an asset to companies that are looking to scale, I believe, from medium to the next level. The importance of AI and understanding it, I think, is we're in that moment. And it's an exciting moment, right? I mean, what are your thoughts about marketing, media, and AI?
Yeah.
That marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, well, generative AI. Well, AI as artificial intelligence has been there for many years now.
Yeah.
Now, the explosion or this new wave is really generative AI, which, again, was there for a few years, but it went mainstream by, like, OpenAI introducing ChatGPT in November 2022. And that was, it became the fastest growing app of all time, ChatGPT. And also, like, it blew up, it blew everybody's mind, like, as far as the possibilities that it has. Now, that... the technology behind that, GPT technology, is the basis of a lot of these apps that are built on top of generative AI, including a lot of these marketing apps, but it's not the only player in the field, right? So there is Facebook, there is Google, of course, like, so that has a lot of a lot to say in this space, of course. And then there are others that are coming, like Apple is rumored to introduce an AI feature, like, or actually a complete AI agent at some point soon. So like, everybody competes there. Now, when it comes to overall this scene, this generative AI has also become very exponentially growing. Like last year alone, it was more than 10,000 new generative AI applications introduced in every field. So it's gonna revolutionize everything. It's probably the biggest revolution that we have seen in 20, 30 years, as big as internet itself. So like, in the sense that it's going to change everything that we know and how it works. Now, one of the aspects is going to change, and is relevant to what I'm going to say about marketing, is that it's going to make product development much easier. So we are going to go from product development right now in many of the fields to product creation. Now, essentially, focusing your time more on what you want your product to be rather than actually going and building it. And then a lot of that AI is going to build it for you. That being said, the impact of AI marketing, generative AI marketing, is like twofold. It's short term versus long term. Short term, this massive amount of apps that are being to the market, that especially they are democratizing content creation of all types. So like from text content, blog posts, social media posting, images, image generation like Midjourney or DALL-E or others, video generation with Sora, upcoming Sora, others. And that is going to make content creation a lot easier for creators. So with that, any creators that can tap into this potential and use it more, they can actually be more efficient and create more, whether they are brands or personal brands, right? So they can really like do a lot more in the direction they want. And then in that sense, it's going to help them be much more efficient, much growing faster, and then like spending less on marketing, or like get the same results with spending less on marketing. Long term, though, what's going to happen is that that becomes an essential for everybody to work, and essentially eliminating the ones that they are not going to adapt. So, and then that, when that becomes a mainstream thing and democratized thing in marketing, what's going to happen is that, in my opinion, the costs of product development are going to go down, and that that budget for product development, a lot of that is going to shift to marketing. So it's going to be more marketing budget everywhere, but then also more competition long term. So in that sense, because it becomes even more about influence and authority and marketing than the actual product creation. So this is kind of my thesis. I think this is going to how it changes in the short term and long term, like so in the market.
I love, thank you for being efficient in your overview here. I think it's important to understand both of the implications. I agree that most things that are repetitious will be automated soon. And you're right. We've been living with AI. I often challenge people, if you like to fly in an airplane, I hate to break it to you. There's a machine in there. And, you know, I think it's also a comfort level, right? I think it's a palatable way that people can accept it. It's fun to play on their and their apps and, you know, do a little cartoon of your face, a caricature. But when it gets to things that people can't quite grasp and it moves so fast, that's where it gets to become a conversation that needs to be had, like what we're doing now. I really do love, I love DALL-E. I have probably 5 AI apps now. I just saw one for publishers, actually. Mm-hmm. And you know, you run into the topic of ethics, and you know, we explore ethics in AI and how to remain ethical. And you know, you're right. There's so much content that is being read. The machines are, I think, what did they say? I read a figure. You could probably help me, but there was something about the amount of content that AI absorbs every day, every minute, up to the minute. We're building a strong foundation. We just have to mind the ethics, don't we? Like anything else?
Absolutely. And that's a very complicated subject, though. So there are like multiple aspects to that. And I keep thinking about that actually every day. One is, and these are maybe a lot of focus, especially in LA, especially in Hollywood, around copyright and around jobs. And those are absolutely right, like the short term. But longer term, think about it this way. Generative AI at some point is going to become millions of times more efficient than people. So now the question is more than just income, because let's say if we had the right leaders and they figure out a way to distribute this richness that comes out of generative AI to everyone. So basic income will become much easier at some point if we have a GDP of the world that is 100x or 1,000x of what we have as a result of both revolutions, generative AI and robotics. And then when they come together, they pretty much, they can do anything. But then the question becomes, a lot of what we see in ourselves is the value we see in ourselves is attributed towards our work. So like a lot of our sense of identity is the work that we do. And if at the time there is an AI that does what we do a million times better than us, so then what do we do at that point? Is it the solution, for example? Is everybody goes towards jobs that caring about each other, or like experiences, for example, or nursing, or other things that basically humans take care of each other. Maybe that's a possibility. Maybe that's what humans are going to go for. But I think it's going like in a very fast trajectory. And I think regulations are definitely behind here. And by the time that we have regulations, we have gone so much. And then by we, I mean like these bigger companies that they introduce this thing. Like they are going to go much deeper into the space. And this is a really unknown space. So I do like to think positively about the positive aspects of that, which is a lot. But there are also risks. And there are definitely like ethical questions, a lot of them. Like, so that basically, I think definitely like it's for sure part of the lawmakers' jobs to address this sooner than later and work with these companies and figure out what's the best interest of the society as a whole, not just a few of these bigger players that they might dominate. Now, at the same time, so like all the countries are competing like against each other. So it's not just the US, right? So like it's like everywhere, like from China, US, because everybody knows whoever also wins in AI is going to have a big leverage over others. So, and then that's another aspect. Do we let innovation in any country in general just go however they want and break everything? And then it may be like at some point, no return from that. Or we come together as countries also, like, and then talk and say, okay, so let's make sense of this. Let's actually prevent the risk, or at least like manage the risks that come out of that. So yeah, so you are absolutely right. There are actually definitely risks and ethical like issues, etc. And to be honest, I don't think these bigger companies that introduce these tools, which are pretty cool tools, have thought enough about that, or maybe they have thought enough about that, but they haven't communicated that enough to the public as far as,
You're right. And you're hitting, you know, you're really covering this. I think that, you know, you're right. We are behind the ball. All of us, it's been coming and it's not going to stop. We're here to evolve and advance. And you're right. If you are a marketer, even when we look at the Da Vinci, I think it's called the Da Vinci device in medical, you know, getting into those spaces surgically to help patients, you're seeing robotics. And we want to preface, we just have a couple minutes here. We want to preface the difference between generative AI, weak AI, strong AI, and the machines. But generative is just anything, if you prompt the platform, the app, or the website, like write me a cover letter for my resume, and you prompt it and you tell it specific, you speak to it. It's assistance, generative assistance, really. If you're asking to be mapped, you know, using maps in your car is, you know, AI, guys. I mean, it just is technology. So, you know, it's important to understand the difference in how you can add it to your business, like you said, to save some time and to be more efficient. So now what we want to talk about is your Rise Op. Let's do a minute and a half on how people can support, be a part, and learn more about what you have going on.
Absolutely. So at Rise Op, what I'm passionate about is really helping small businesses grow, right? So small and medium-sized businesses grow. And we definitely have one extra layer, and is that we work with businesses that we think they have the right morale, like, so in general. So like if what the company does, for example, it hurts the public, we don't work with them. And then maybe like that's one thing that differentiates us in general. But, and then the way I see it is that if you help decent founders and decent businesses grow, so you are actually contributing to the betterness of the society also, right? So like that's like kind of what I see. Now that comes like then to eventually what Rise Op, I want Rise Op to be, is that you plug it to your company and you grow from there. So, and that becomes why the fractional CMO as an agency. We used to be, I'm a top 1% SEO expert myself, besides like having been in marketing for 20 years, et cetera. And that being said, we started as an SEO company, but because of my previous experiences, the clients kept asking, can you become our fractional CMO? Can you help us with like all of the marketing? So more than just SEO, not everything. And then that's how we became a fractional CMO company, which is essentially, okay, so our method is we tell you what of the marketing campaigns you should go for, depending on your budget and industry and everything. And that's actually a process with that, of course, right? And then we also help you with getting the best experts. For example, the Google Ads experts that I introduce usually, he's a person that we have worked with. He has his own agency. He's a person that has we have worked with for 10 years. I trust him. And he has done Google Ads for over 250 different companies. So like, so that level of excellence. So that's kind of what we want to bring. Or like SEO, like we are really good, really strong at SEO. And that's really one of those channels that can build a company's presence.
We have to do another hour. I could talk to you all day. Rise up. I see the play on words there. Thank you for doing this. Let's connect again. Really love your mission statement and everything you've done in the C-suite and
growth. Absolutely.
Come back, all right? Rise up, you guys. Well, we start up today. We'll see you next week. Be well.
By the way, just rise OPP, right? Rise OPP.
Rise OPP.
Rise up. Yeah.
Be well. Be kind to each other. Be safe.
Ciao. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Larray, only on LA Talk Radio.